This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Who's the bad guy? We're trying to think of the bad guy. No, it's not Johnny K.
But it's close. It's Truszynski, I think.
Is John it Truszynski? John Truszynski. Johnny K. would take some of the dough.
Yeah.
From that. I think we all would take the boat.
It's funny, too. Like, there's the cremation guy is Kevin Watterson.
Yeah.
And there's a tweeter.
Yeah, tweeter.
I think he used to be, like, a political guy, political flack. But
he'd take the cremation. Have you decided when you're done? Cremation, funeral?
Dust to dust, baby.
Dust to dust?
Yep. Either that or like a natural, just roll me in a sheet and
throw you somewhere?
Put me in a...
How about if we just put you in the closet here for a little bit?
Taxidermy?
Yeah. How about if we stuff you here?
Oh. Have you seen those wakes where they like make people look like they're doing, you know...
Like they're alive?
Yes.
Is that like they're golfing or something?
Yeah, well, I saw one where it was big Pittsburgh Steelers fan where they put him in a Steelers seat. With all the Steelers clothes on, and
wait a second. So I go into the church, and it's like
it's like a funeral home. So
okay,
it's
funeral,
wake.
And he's sitting there he's got his terrible towel and his Bradshaw.
I've seen one
in.
Where they brought in a guy, put him on his motorcycle.
I'm out on that.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's just really creepy looking, and don't do that for me. Don't like bring in a microphone, and I'll be sitting.
Well, first of all, here's what we would do: we would have you in front of the microphone, looking at a phone. Not paying attention, maybe have the B-dub website.
Just some wings in front of me.
Lindsay, would you like that if we kind of have you like looking online and checking the Lifetime schedule or looking up cats and it's just you kind of permanently in that seat?
I don't know. I don't know if I would like that.
I'd hate. Now, where are you guys on the open casket?
Where do you stand on
be
the
cremated.
Open casket?
I
don't like it.
I hate the open casket. Do you like going to funerals with the open casket? I'll go. It's not like I'm going to say I'm not going because you have the open casket, but I feel very, very uncomfortable.
I don't necessarily feel uncomfortable.
Do you ever climb in the casket?
Yes, that's actually who told
get
you?
Get my 5-wood out of there. The 5-wood.
It's
a great Curb episode.
I don't want to play like the dead dad card, but when my dad passed away, you get asked if you want to go in and see him. And he was at home. He had a heart attack at home.
Yep.
And I was so not prepared for how comfortable I was going to be. And I know that sounds very strange, but anyone who's dealt with losing a loved one at home, you like the police were there and they were so kind. Yep. And it was kind of like now or never. And so we went in and they had put him on this stretcher and made him look very comfortable and wrapped him up in a blanket. And you're just kind of like, it's just very surreal and it's not eerie or creepy at all. It was a beautiful sunny day and you just kind of say your goodbyes.
Yeah.
But it made me a lot more comfortable with dealing with all of that
stuff.
And
you described it beautifully. My gut tells me I don't want to see it. I don't think, well, first of all, my father's going to live 75 more years.
Right.
But if something happens and I'm not there and they can say, do you want to see him one last time? Yes, I do want to see him one last, but I want to see him.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to see him with his soul, his spirit, and with everything. Because I ran into somebody I know the other day, and this is a different version of your story, but his dad died at the house. Okay. And his relatives had to call him and they had to. They themselves had to take him off the bed, and by then the rigor mortis and everything had set in.
Yeah.
And then I don't want that to be such a memory that it in any way just even clouds even a little bit of the other parts.
One of my sisters didn't want to see him. I guess that she had an agreement with my dad when they had talked about death. They had a deal that he didn't want her to see him that way, and yeah. So she didn't see him. And, you know, I think it's just – it's different for every person. But in that immediate moment, you know, you're given like a minute to decide. And it's like, would yeah. you rather regret not saying goodbye or have the car pull away and go, oh, my gosh, I didn't take it. It's just – yeah, but I agree with you when the makeup and stuff, when they're all done up in a casket and they don't look like themselves.
He's talking about literally where they set him up in like activity
I found
that
a,
they
I found
liked.
Like an ABC story here on – dead people get real life poses at their funerals. Yeah, and it's just not, it does not, it's not good.
What was that exhibit they did years ago where they like took the human body and they were like,
oh, yeah.
And
oh.
then they'd be playing like
body
poker.
Works.
Yes. Body works.
It's
yeah.
The
yeah.
scene
yeah.
in that
yes.
one yeah. James Bond movie where they're going through the museum.
Body works. Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I would donate myself to that if I could be doing something really cool though. Well, only really cool. I don't want to be just like sitting in an armchair.
Here's my one quick. I've got multiple open caskets, the one that haunts me still a little bit. So I'm trying to qualify for this golf tournament. And I get the date, and I call a friend of mine who lives in this area, and I say, hey, I'm going to play, you know, finish, maybe play off, maybe I play terrible, but let's go on the boat afterwards. I go up there, dopey me, I went up there the wrong day, the day before. I pull in the parking lot, and the guy knows me, that bro's like, hey, you coming up for practice? I'm like, great. So I turn around, I go back, I call my friend. I say, hey, I screwed up the date. Can we do it tomorrow? He goes, sure, we'll do it tomorrow. I drive up. Luckily enough, I qualified. And at the time, I kept my phone away. So I get to my car, and there's like 25 messages. My friend, who I was going to go on a boat with, fell in the water and drowned. And I was going to be on the boat with him. And I think about that a lot. And then at his wake, there's this long line. And as I'm winding around, they did an open casket. And as I'm right next to the open casket, that's when they had the service. And I'm just looking and going, really? I'm right here, you know? And they spoke for like 15 minutes, and I'm right next to it. And I was haunted by, you know, what happens if I had the date right and all that. And it just, but yeah, I've been to a half dozen open casket. And I know a lot of people think it's absolutely what you should do. It's your choice. I
was think about it in the olden days. They'd be at your house, you know, yeah. Your mom or your dad would die and they'd be right in the house, like for a night.
Yeah. No thanks.
No.
No, I couldn't do it. 10 past 2. Here's Adam. Okay, this story broke yesterday afternoon, well after we were off the air, but we got to get to it. As the Lion Air crew fought to control their diving Boeing 737 MAX 8, they got help from an unexpected source, an off-duty pilot who happened to be riding in the cockpit. The extra pilot, seated in the jump seat, correctly diagnosed the problem and told the crew how to disable a malfunctioning flight control system and save the plane, according to multiple people familiar with the Indonesia investigation. This is the 5 months before Ethiopia. The next day, under command of a different crew, facing what investigators said was an identical malfunction, the jetliner crashed into the sea, killing all 189 aboard. Now, I'm seeing it literally right now on Fox News, okay? And I've watched some on CNN. I guess I don't get why this isn't the biggest story on the planet today. We're talking about how the world has shut down these planes, Adam and Lindsay. And now we're saying the day before this first one, someone who happened to just be on there saved all these people's lives And then the next day, when they couldn't figure it out, 189 people died. The previously undisclosed, this is Bloomberg, credit to them for the reporting. The previously undisclosed detail represents a new clue. The so-called deadhead pilot on the earlier flight told the crew to cut the power to the motor driving the nose down, according to people familiar, part of the checklist that all pilots are required to memorize. All the data and information we have on the flight and the aircraft have been submitted to the Indonesia NTSC. We can't provide any additional comment, said the Lion Air spokesman. The Indonesia Safety Committee reported the plane had multiple failures on previous flights and hadn't been properly repaired. How in the bleep does this happen, Adam? How is this possible that the day before this happens and boom, it's right back up in the air and this isn't shut down for an extended period to say, what happened? Was it on the pilots they didn't know? Was it a malfunction? But to just say, okay, whew, we dodged that one. We're good. Let's put this back up in the air.
What scares you is, too, is like it makes you think, okay, what other airlines are trying, doing the same thing where, whoa, we had a significant problem on this aircraft yesterday. Well, you know, we need the room. We need the jet.
Now, what a lot of people would say who are defenders of the FAA and the NTSB in this country was we would pat ourselves on the back and say, well, in the United States, this wouldn't happen. I hope so. But like you said, do we know
we're
that?
Also one of the last countries to ground the aircraft, correct?
Yeah. And more data coming out seems like that was the whether the decision was for political reasons, public reasons. It's the right decision. We talked about this last week also about who runs this. That more and more of this information that some of these bigger companies like Boeing, that their own people overseeing key parts of the final okay to put these planes in the air, when, by the way, the 737 MAX is the best-selling jet and has more than 4,600 pending orders, which will expect to bring billions of dollars. So, Adam, you're working for Boeing, but they now delegate you in the group where you're still getting a paycheck for Boeing. This point we were making with our guest last week, Scott, I'm forgetting his last name, the former FAA administrator. And you're the one who's trying to give this the last over, you know, last look, the last overhaul. And I'm not saying you're going to be the person to say, well, I think it's 50-50, but let's go. But you're telling me if Lindsay's your major boss and I'm that mid-level boss, there's not going to be plenty of pressure on you, by the way, because our company can make hundreds of billions of dollars to say, hey, Adam, come on. We've seen this every single time. We're fine. And so there is that line, right, of we want the innovation. We want the planes available. We want to be able to fly as fast, as efficient. And we also want to fly safe. And we don't want government to continue to increase, right? So if we can use these giant corporations, should we continue to have people from the actual companies? We're down to just, you know, such a few companies run this. But I'm again, this story, just going back to it, the Lion Air crew is fighting for the control of the plane. The extra pilot steps in, helps out with the malfunction, and then the next day the same plane goes down. I mean, 189 people. Let's pause. Don't forget, Joe Freeberg is with us in about 15 minutes with many interesting legal topics here on the home of the Twins, WCCO. Money. All right, Lindsay, you want to tell me how you found the story about the San Francisco car burglar? And what was left?
It's turd my friend burglar. Allie. The turd burglar.
Yeah.
My friend Allie posted on Twitter yesterday before this really became a story that her car got broken into and that they rifled through everything. But they left
poop
in the backseat. They took a dump in her car. And it's going viral because it should. Because if there's going to be any positivity to this story, it's the fact that Allie's getting some play from the fact that someone broke into her car and did a number two on the floor of her backseat.
Well, you got DNA now. Carter, you going to follow up on this?
Well, if that person did Ancestry.com or My23.
No, now she's dealing with the $250 car cleaning fee, because who wants to get back into your vehicle?
I'm going over on $250. That's not enough for me to get that car.
Yeah. I told her I would send her, I would Venmo her some money, and she said, no, this is my crappy situation that I'm in. I mean, the puns just write themselves. But yeah, no, she was out doing some work and left her car on a street and came back. And first sign that something was weird, you know, you see how they rifled through everything. And she was like, well, they didn't get anything, like a couple mixed CDs and like a phone charger. And then I'm sure she was like, well, what is that?
Do we want to try to analyze the psychosis of the individual who decides to do this? I mean, I'm not capable.
No, but I said to her, I was like, you're going to end up on some late night show. Like somewhere.
Well, maybe she did it intentionally, Carter. She wants to pop. She wants the clicks.
I mean, yeah, that could be it.
What if it turns out it's her own DNA?
Ew.
Ew. Well, ew.
I mean, people have done worse things for attention. I'm going to go ahead and say that she probably did not.
Okay, this is out of San Francisco, that story. This is another one out of San Francisco, the world's first VR gym. The world's first virtual reality gym, as I'm seeing Adam flip his hair in the background. You're digging that new haircut, aren't you?
No, it's getting too long. It's getting unruly and greasy.
The guy who went from not caring at all about his hair has got
go back to not caring.
He's got the fancy, in case you missed it, Adam did admit last week that he cuts his hair. Now it's $1,750. But it looks fantastic.
Twice a month.
It looks fantastic. Okay. Black Box is the first virtual reality gym. It was founded in 2016. So this columnist went there. It tracks all the, you know, stats. The headset was very comfortable. And with the headset on, I was transported to a virtual waiting room. And then I was catapulted in the first of 10 virtual battle arenas. The writer said, the graphics made the environment appear as real, as an animated game as I could hope to look. And all sorts of different traditional exercises you had to do to win and advance in the game. The more you play, the more units, arenas, and trophies you unlock. So it's like you're playing a video game, but you're right in the middle of it, and you're getting this workout. We wanted this to be a real workout, not Wii Fit. Would also track everything you're doing and react real-life way. The company says they expect you to burn 250 to 400 calories for a 30 to 35-minute session. It's not cheap. $199 a month for unlimited access. If the money wasn't an obstacle at all, interest in doing this to work out,
I'd try it out.
My interest would be very high. I'd love. So Charge has a great virtual reality setup, and he lives nearby. And it's spectacular. So if I could do this, Lindsay, and the whole point is I'm doing something and I'm enjoying it and I'm having fun and I'm just not thinking, hey, I'm tired or I want to stop. Isn't that the whole point of why we, first of all, we should, you know, want to be healthy. But then you find things that you enjoy. Now, maybe you enjoy the spirit of other people, but maybe they can do it along with you and you're competing. I'd love to do this.
I just am kind of confused. So you put on the glasses.
Yep.
Is there any sort of machines there?
Yeah, you have to do traditional exercises.
Let's see. Are you going to run on a treadmill?
Chest press, overhead press, row, lat. So they've got machines
and
there.
I am assuming that they have some sort of, you know, like heart rate monitor or whatever it is to. That would be kind of cool. I'm not a super competitive person, but if I do think the game aspect of like unlocking cool things or seeing where you were going to go.
Yep. Because somebody says, how isn't this just Wii Fit? Again, at Chartres did it once. It's spectacular, right? And I know this will shock a lot of people. I was a bit cynical. And it was, and Wii Fit, and what's the new thing Quinny has? What's the Nintendo? Text me, 81807, where 1 minute you're plugged into the TV and then you can carry.
Switch?
Switch, yeah, the Switch. Those are great. But it's not like you're in the middle. I mean, you're watching the game. You're playing. But in these virtual reality, you're in the game. You're right in the middle of it. I actually think when I saw the cost, and again, $200 is plenty, I thought it'd be more to have this. I mean, for the more expensive places here in town. What, like that Lifetime boutique that's out in...
The one here next door, and that's still pretty high-end Lifetime.
Yeah, what do you think that is, Lindsay? Don't you think that's
used to be like 124. I mean, that was probably 10 years ago.
I bet it's 150 at least.
I don't think it's that high because I'm like the second tier, and I don't pay that. I pay well under $100. Like, I'm under... 70 a month right now.
Really? Because the one I'm not, I don't think I'm as high as you, and I pay like 80 something.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that one, and I think the one, where is it? Is that
Minnetonka,
yeah.
So there's like three of the very
the former
fancy ones.
T. Wright's.
Yes. The Minnetonka, Eden Prairie, and then the one next door. I don't know what level the Southdale one's going to be when that opens up, but I would imagine that that's probably going to be pretty fancy. But then there's even, is it the Steel Fitness?
Right, these boutique places.
Those ones
places.
Are much smaller boutique, but even a place like Core Power, you're paying, I want to say it's like $100 a month for unlimited yoga.
Right.
So
I bet that there are boutique places in your... Well, where Adam lives on Summit Avenue in St. Paul, and then he dine in places where I bet you're $200.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and consider San Francisco. The average house is a mill. $200 is probably a bargain. Traffic, weather, and then the great Joe Freeberg on a myriad of law issues. When we come back. Joe Freeberg is a fantastic lawyer, and he's also a fantastic radio guest, and he's kind enough to join us. Hello, sir. How are you?
How are you, Chad?
I am doing very well. Glad to catch up. Let's jump in, because there's plenty to discuss. The news broke yesterday that prosecutors in Palm Beach had offered Robert Kraft a deal. Kraft had been a part of a prostitution sting, where individuals, 25, were arrested on misdemeanor charges buying sex at a place called the Orchids of Asia Day Spa in Jupiter. Now, the reports were that this is the focus of a wider investigation into human sex trafficking. He would have to admit that he was soliciting prostitution if the case were to go to trial, and that if it did go to trial, he would win. He would also have to be part of community service and also would have to be tested for STDs. In the last 90 minutes or so, more reports coming out that Robert Kraft will not accept this deal, and the attorneys are adamant, saying that Mr. Kraft did not engage in any illegal activity. What is your overview on what has taken place?
Well, this is a standard offer that they make in that jurisdiction. To people who were caught and charged as Johns in sex investigations. It still carries with it, for somebody who's in public life, like Bob Kraft, the indicia of guilt. And his lawyers have said from the beginning that he's not guilty of anything. despite the fact that law enforcement has taken the position they have video of him being
right.
guilty of something. He, based on his public statements, it would be very difficult for him to take this deal. And so I guess they're going to set the case for trial.
I mean, isn't this pretty clear, Joe? If they have video of him, they have it. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah, they may have video of him. You know, I want to kind of slice this anyway.
Yes.
To be sliced.
Right.
They could have video of him involved in a sex act, but have no evidence that he paid for it.
Yeah.
In which case, he wouldn't be guilty of what he's charged with. I don't know that it would be any more less ignominious for him to be involved in going into a day spa and having consensual, non-monetary sex with somebody he didn't know, but that wouldn't be against the law.
Okay, so he's your client, and that's it. Let's say that's a scenario. He went in, had sex, but they believe they can't prove that there was any payment. And so now he can either take the plea or he can take the risk and go to trial. What would your guidance be on the limited information you have?
You know, that's impossible. Because you got to go with your client's wishes. And if your client wants a trial, and your client knows what happened, right?
Yep.
And you as the lawyer do not know what happened. If there's video, you get to see it. And then you've got to tell your client the truth about what you see. But if your client wants a trial, I don't care if he's confessed and he's on video. If he wants a trial, you give him a trial.
Well, he also may be worried, Joe, about if he admits his guilt, the ramifications within the NFL and the punishments he might face and what effect that might be having on the decisions making in one area with the courts, but what might be even more important to him, his role as the owner of the Patriots.
You know, I can't conceive of any harsh punishment by the NFL for taking part in being a John. The percentage of men in this country that have made use of prostitutes would probably overwhelmingly shock people, but I don't see it as a real problem. I see it as being embarrassing. I believe his wife has passed away three or
yes.
four years ago.
Yeah, even longer than that, yeah.
I don't know if he has a girlfriend who could be a little annoyed about it.
Well, he did for a while, and then, I mean, there's some salacious parts of that because she had a child with somebody else, but then at one point, Robert Kraft and the girlfriend were back together. Now, what's going on? I have no idea, and my interest level isn't that high.
Well, let's try it this way. I don't think any less or more of Robert Kraft because he may have partaken of a prostitute services at all. I don't know what your opinion is, and I don't know what the public's feelings are, but I just don't see this as very serious. As to whether or not you, in the circumstances of this particular case, you are knowingly participating in promoting sex trafficking.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Right. That's the part I was going to bring up. Because if we want to have the conversation about should we legalize prostitution among consenting adults, that's a very fair conversation. But if this somehow, if this organization is tied to sex trafficking and it turns into a bigger story and he's one of the clients, then I think, is there going to be some question of, well, what responsibility did Robert Kraft have about knowing where he might be going?
I would think, you know, and I've been involved in some of these cases, obviously. I would think your ability to determine that the woman that you're having sex with is a victim of sex trafficking as opposed to a willing participant in prostitution, that's very, very difficult to tell, I would think.
Let's get to the Knorr case because it's coming up April 1st, and I'll just review the last time we had a ruling. A judge restricted prosecutors from presenting several pieces of evidence at the upcoming trial, including the officer's prior work performance and a psychological exam.
Well, that's an absolutely proper ruling, and not only that, I think it is completely facetious of the prosecution to even have attempted to get that type of evidence in, and I don't know why they did, because any idiot would know that that's inadmissible.
So I'll just read a little bit more and get you to continue here. The Hennepin County District Judge ruled the prosecutors could not use Knorr's prior acts as a police officer against him, including a 2017 incident in which he pointed a gun at a motorist during a traffic stop and accusations that he occasionally refused to respond to police calls while he was in training. Why specifically should those be eliminated for any consideration about what happened the events of the night?
Well, in order, those are what are called, we call in this state, Spiegel evidence, which is evidence of other crimes or wrongs, which the prosecution tries to put into evidence in order to show it's more likely that you committed the crime on this occasion. There's some very restrictive rules on those. First of all, they would have to be extremely similar. And second of all, it's impossible for a judge to make a final ruling until she has heard all the evidence in the case.
Do you think in any way any of this somehow gets back into the case once the trial itself starts?
I think there's a possibility that pulling a gun on a motorist under different circumstances, I'd have to know more of the details. I don't think that's going to get in, but there's an outside possibility based on how the evidence develops in trial that it could.
What is your feeling about this case coming up? Because we know when it takes place, trust me, we'll call you a bunch, and there's going to be a lot of anticipation, but just any of the other rulings and just your feeling, you know, less than 2 weeks out.
Well, to me, this is either a case of second-degree manslaughter or it's nothing. When the prosecution originally tried third-degree murder, it was my opinion that that's ridiculous. There's no way that the facts, as I understand them from the news, could support a third-degree murder charge. Well, the judge didn't throw it out. I was very surprised with that ruling. But then the prosecution has amended and included an intentional murder charge.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, within the facts of this case, it is more likely to be a second-degree murder than it is a third-degree murder. I still think third-degree murder doesn't fit at all, but intentional second-degree murder probably will survive motion to dismiss. The prosecution has got these murder counts in there because they want a jury to be in a position to compromise and say,
yeah,
let's let him off the murder and convict him of the manslaughter. It's rather obvious to me that based on what we believe happened, that it's either a gross negligence case or it's nothing at all.
Should we have this, you know, where the prosecution, whether it's here or elsewhere, can put kind of the smorgasbord up there, trying to cover their tracks and making sure that the jurors, okay, if it's not this one versus, okay, here's exactly what we're trying to prove, and we have to stay within those means.
Well, you know, it is a prosecution tactic. In federal court, they many times will charge people with 15 or 20 counts. And frankly, they generally will get the same sentence with one or two counts as they will with 15. The jury doesn't realize that. And the prosecution has the dynamic of compromise on their side in criminal cases. It's a very frequent prosecution tactic. Defense lawyers don't like it, but frankly, there's nothing legally wrong with doing it.
About 2 minutes left here. Giving the middle finger apparently is protected free speech, even when it's directed at a police officer. So a woman's driving over the limit in Michigan.
Yeah, right.
And the officer wrote a ticket for non-moving violation, which is less serious. As she's driving away, she's not real pleased. And guess what? She gives him the finger. So he pulls her over again and changed the ticket to reflect the more serious violation. They were separate traffic stops, and the judges found that the first stop was justified, but said the second one was not.
Well, I guess I agree with the judge. I think it's a very bad tactic to be giving a police officer the finger.
I was going to ask you that, if you're encouraging your clients to do that.
I've never done it. I've generally had more sense than that, but I do believe it's First Amendment protected.
Well,
even if you said the words that it represents,
yep.
I think that's First Amendment protected as well. But I wouldn't advise anybody to do it.
Yeah, and I guess they're saying, okay, it's one thing if he would have given her the ticket right from the get-go, but just to say because it was the magic finger that you now can't go back, that it was some sort of agreement, and this negates the agreement.
Well, there's two lessons to be learned. First, police officers should not give people a break. And second of all, once they receive them, people should not give police officers the finger.
That's probably the best question. She got a break. What was she looking for?
I don't know. That's really that's a ridiculous thing to do. You know, I've had lots of clients while they're being led away to jail tell police officers what they could do with themselves. It generally gets them a cuff on the back of the head or a little bit tightening of the handcuffs. But it's clearly your First Amendment right if you care to assert it.
I guess that has been proven now. Always a pleasure, sir. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Chad.
Joe Freeberg, fabulous as always. 53 past 2. That's the Linus Construction Time Check. Time to call us for free home improvement estimates on windows and insulation. The leader of the free world speaking in Ohio, once again jousting with a dead American hero, John McCain. Among the things Donald Trump has said in the last 45 minutes, I gave him the funeral they asked for, and I didn't even get a thank you. No, Mr. President, you are such a disgrace to John McCain and the family. They didn't invite you to the funeral. No thank you was necessary. Once again, boundaries of any sort of decency do not matter to this man. On that upbeat note, we got to go.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.